Hello and welcome to this week's No Nay Never podcast, episode 99 of the No Nay Never podcast. With me this week are James and Natalie to go over Saturday's 0-0 draw at home to Ipswich Town. And we're going to talk about the transfer window as well, since that's flown open. Does it fly open or slam shut? Fly open sounds like it could be a thing. Not much entertainment on short the turf on Saturday, James. Fairly tight game between two good defensive teams. What did you make of the performance?
I didn't think it was awful, but I don't think it was good at the same time. I think it's a tough one to say, because I think early on it became clear that the referee wasn't really keen on giving anything Andre Gray's way, and I think after that it sort of took away our main attacking threat.
There weren't many chances created from either side, were there? It was very much a midfield battle. I think two teams playing a lot of long ball football as well.
Yeah, and I think as well there was a lot of perimeter play, really, wasn't it? It was like, you know, the ball kind of got to the edge of the area, and then there was a bit of a battle, and then it got to the edge of the other area, and that was kind of just the way the game went. The ball was getting lumped one way to the other and never actually making it into the danger zone. So I think it was one that really both teams would probably forget, but I think it was exactly what Ipswich came for, you know, a draw at the turf, and I think that's what they wanted.
It was very stop-start, wasn't it, Natalie? From the very start, I think, was it Christophe Barrow went down and there was a 3-4 minute delay right in the opening couple of minutes. That seemed to really set the tone for the afternoon.
Definitely. It was a really weird start to the game, to be honest. We looked like we were going to go out all guns blazing and really, you know, go for it. And I think when we had about 8 minutes on the clock, we'd played probably 2 minutes worth of football. It was a really strange start to the game, which, like you say, just seemed to dampen any enthusiasm, possibly both on the terraces and on the pitch as well. It was an odd one.
Burnley just seemed to struggle to create much. Gray didn't have the best day, I think it's fair to say. He was getting caught offside every minute by the end of the game. It was a bit ridiculous, but he struggled to get the ball into his feet, I think, and they marshalled him very well, didn't they? Do you think the ref could have given him a bit more protection? There was a lot of holding seems to be going on.
Definitely. I'm sure we'll come on to this in a minute, but the referee had, quite frankly, one of the most appalling performances I think I've ever seen in a long time. But he just seemed to get every single decision wrong. And we talked after the game about protection. In most games, you know, any single time he gets near the ball, he's got two or three players on him, and they shirt tugging, they manhandling him, they're pulling him back, they're standing on him, and it seems to attract a really physical defence of his play, and I think that's possibly because he is a very strong physical player. He does this great move where he backs into players and he just creates so much space in front of him, and it's a, you know, really good strikers and good physical strikers tend to do that. He just, even if it's just one step back and he opens his chest and his arms out, and he just seems to create this massive amount of space in front of him. And we're seeing now defences are counteracting that by just almost flooring him whenever they can. And referees just, for some reason, seem to be really lenient and don't, you know, offer him any protection whatsoever.
It was a difficult game for Gray, wasn't it, James? But he did have the best chance of the game. It was probably just one of those matches where you only get one really good chance and unfortunately you missed it.
I think that was one that, I think you could see that he was really frustrated that he'd not taken it. And, you know, it was a great ball in from Cartley. And I think
it took a deflection, actually. I was looking at the highlights. It took a little nick off the defender.
Maybe that's why Gray missed. You know, he didn't expect it to quite take that path. But I think when you were watching, it didn't look like the obvious ball. I think people were probably expecting Cartwright to put a ball in around the 6-yard box, but Gray found himself in a lot of space on the edge of the area, and I think he'd want that one back, to be honest.
Mentioned Cartwright there, it was Cartwright's ball in, and we've got to credit it for him, even though there's maybe a little bit of luck with the deflection. What did you make of his performance? I was a bit frustrated with his end product, but that's a regular bugbear for me and Cartwright.
I think he's exactly what we've missed in a lot of other games. Obviously, his end product's not been quite there, and I think that's been the case his whole Burnley career. And partly that might be because he's not really played enough consistently since the end of the promotion season. But what he does that we really miss when George Boyd's playing is he wants to get at his man. And, you know, I think he had the beat of his full-back on Saturday. The end product wasn't the best, but he's always willing to have another go and run at people, which I think, you know, is what we need right now.
Natalie, you noticed when his number went up that he didn't seem particularly happy with the decision. Obviously, censor yourself, but you were using your lip reading skills, weren't you? It's a family podcast.
It is a family podcast, so we won't directly translate this. But yeah, he'd just taken, I think he'd either just taken a throw-in or there's something had happened that the game had stopped right in front of where we sit. We don't sit that many rows back from the pitch, so we usually have a pretty good view. And he turned away to Sam, actually, as this, you could see the board going up, and he just gave Sam this really, like, it was like a really sly grin, and then he looked over and saw his number, and he turned to Sam, who was facing us as well, and he said, "For b**'s sake, it's always b**ing me." And he was absolutely furious. And it was quite weird as well to see Sam's reaction, because Sam looked really, really awkward, which made it sort of realise that it was quite a genuine frustration. And he just kind of looked down to the ground and went, "Ooh, sorry, mate." But he was genuinely furious. Now, I was watching him going off the pitch, and obviously by the time he got to the dugout, he was professionally, was respectful. He shook everybody's hands. He didn't have a strop, which you've seen with some divas who don't like getting substituted. But he was definitely annoyed, really annoyed.
Most players are when they were substituted. It was just interesting that you had such a good view and spotted exactly what he said. It's tough for Kylie because he's been in and out of the side pretty much since he arrived at the turf. But it's consistency for me, and maybe he does need a run of games to get that consistency, but it's difficult to stick with a player who can look really good one week and then just not really do anything the next. I think even though Boyd's been out of form, Dash thinks he maybe gets a more reliable performance out of him with all these running.
Yeah, he's consistently bad.
Consistently. I thought he was absolutely appalling. Like, I know he was only on the pitch for 20 minutes, but I'd have probably taken him off.
Yeah. Well, that seems really unfair. It's like he's not prepared to give Kightley a run in the side because of a consistency issue, we assume, because he's really good one week. And I agree with you, he was great when he came on last week. This week, slightly less effective, but still an improvement on Boyd. Yet he's not prepared to... You know, he takes the opposite view with Boyd, and he's not prepared to drop him straight away when he's had a pop. And it's a really weird thing. It's like, why has Boyd got this ridiculous special treatment that Kightley doesn't seem to be given?
He just seems to have his favourites. Maybe it's just he rates Boyd as a better player, and I think Boyd costs twice as much, didn't it? So the market seems to suggest that he is. But I think Boyd's form throughout most of 2015 suggested that him and Kylie are probably a similar level. Should touch on the other substitutions as well, I suppose. 88 minutes for a double change when it's 0-0. I suppose it's just par for the course, isn't it, though, with Sean Dyche? No one would have been surprised.
But what's the point?
What is the point?
Yeah.
If you're Hennings has barely had his boots on since he scored at Cardiff. He's barely had a chance. And so then you're asked to go on for 90 seconds in injury time. Yeah. And he almost scored at the end. Maybe if he'd been on a couple of minutes longer, he'd have put that chance away.
But everybody in the ground could see that game needed changing from the 60th minute. It was such a stale game, and it was two sides who just could not break each other down. So it was obviously going to stay 0-0 unless either a penalty was given or some miraculous screamer came out of nowhere. What was the point of bringing people on with 3 minutes to go? I get so frustrated sometimes with Dyche's substitution tactics, and that was the pinnacle of it for me on Saturday. I just think it was ridiculous.
I think I put on Twitter that it felt like he was trolling me in particular, because I got so irate at it. It just doesn't bother me anymore. I think Borough was when I was getting the most mad because he took so long to change it. And after that, I'm just like, well, he's not going to change. So
I think he stalks you on Twitter. I think he's got some kind of secret Twitter profile. Knowing how much he loves Twitter, he only follows you. And he does the polar opposite of what you want to do, Jamie.
Yeah, I need to put my account on private, I think. James, I suppose there's nothing new to say about the substitutions, is there? But I think Dyche said that he didn't want to change the feel of the game.
I don't think there's anything he could do to change the feel of the game, was it really? I think it was all about the referee.
Well, it was quite a poor game, and he put George Boyd on, so he certainly didn't change the feel of the game.
Well, you know, maybe he thought George Boyd could outrun the referee and he'd, you know, not miss something. I'm not sure. To me, the game was sort of ruined when it took the referee sort of 70-odd minutes to give Burnley a meaningful decision. You know, once it was clear that the defenders could do pretty much whatever they wanted to Andre Aguirre on the edge of the box, I think we might as well have packed up and gone home at that point.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because you want it to be a fair battle, and I think players like Gray have to get a bit more protection. Like, there was one in particular where Gray got the better of the battle and was about to turn and run away, and the defender just hauled him down and got away with it. And it's like, what's Gray supposed to do if he engages with the defender and comes out on top and then gets absolutely tackled to the ground, rugby tackled? It just seems pointless.
The worst one for me was actually the one where the ball had sort of gone into the air, you know, miles up. It bounces and neither of them had touched the ball yet, and the defender just sort of climbs onto Gray and smothers him into the ground, and the referee gives absolutely nothing. Like, you know, he hasn't even been given the opportunity to play the ball, and he's been fouled, and there's nothing given. So it was an interesting day for the referee.
While we're on the referee, then, we should mention the disallowed goal that Ben Mee scored. Mee himself said that he wasn't sure what the offence was. I'm not sure if you had the chance to see any replays, James, but can you shed any light on that? Do you think it was another poor decision?
I also have absolutely no idea what it was given for, but what I did notice was, I think, I don't know if it was about that incident, but soon after, Ben Mee was talking to the referee, and the referee just seemed to be gesturing about a shirt pull. So whether he thought someone was being impeded in the box, I'm not sure, but he didn't really seem to be in a hurry to give it, and he couldn't really tell what it was for, to be honest. And I didn't see any Ipswich players really appealing for anything either.
That was a strange thing for me. I was looking at I was in the cricket field stand, and the post in the middle was completely blocking my view, so I didn't even see the ball go in, let alone any sort of blocking. Looking at the highlights today, it looked like Gray was maybe standing in front of the keeper. That was the only thing I could see, that maybe Gray had been judged to have blocked the keeper. And the way the ref treated Gray, it wouldn't surprise me if he'd found a reason to disallow a goal for that. But yeah, looking at the highlights, the man that Mee was with, he was staring at the floor as if he knew he'd just got done and made a mistake, not asking the referee to disallow it because he'd been fouled. Natalie, what was your view of that incident?
I'm exactly the same. I must have looked at that goal like 50 times. I cannot for the life of me find where the foul is. And I find it absolutely ludicrous if it is a shirt-pulling offence, given that he didn't recognise shirt-pulling as an offence when any Ipswich player committed it against our players. So it makes his performance even more laughable if that's what he's disallowed a goal for, when he just let the rest of them go for the entire game. I don't get it. It was a bizarre decision. And it changed the game. Now, there's nothing to suggest that if it had been allowed and we'd have gone one up there, that the game would have been completely different. You would have expected Ipswich to come out and try and get an equaliser, so it probably would have opened up the game. So there's no guarantee that we would have got, you know, 3 points from it. But it's a really, really poor decision, and it's one that could very well have cost us some valuable points.
I suppose looking at positives, moving away from the referee, it's back-to-back clean sheets since the new look back five was put together. And Keane and Mee looked a very good partnership. Ben Mee, who we talked about his height and whether that would be a problem, in a very physical, difficult strike to deal with in Daryl Murphy, had another excellent game, James.
I thought Ben Mee had a really strong game. I think it's more fair to judge him on the full 90 minutes this week than previously, because obviously when you're 4-0 up, it doesn't really matter if you make a mistake. But he was absolutely solid all game, I thought. And, you know, it looks like it's going to be difficult to see Duff getting back in the side any time soon.
It's interesting that we're being linked with a move for a defender. We'll come on to it a bit later in the podcast, but that would suggest that maybe Dyche isn't completely settled with his back five. I thought Ward played well as well. There was one block in particular, I think the ball was falling from a set piece to an Ipswich attacker, and he looked like he was going to get a shot on target, and Ward threw himself at it. It was quite a Ben Mee sort of tackle. I think there was one moment, wasn't there, Natalie, when Mee made a mistake on the halfway line and Ipswich looked like they were going to get him, but Keane's pace, he's got more than enough pace to make up for little slips like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in the two games that Mee's now played in the centre, he has made one little slip up in both games. And in both times, interestingly, Keane's been there to cover him. I think it's harsh to judge him. I've seen some knee-jerk reactions where people have actually said, oh, that's why you can't play Ben Mee in the centre, because he's prone to those. Well, he's prone to those in most games. We tend to have one Mee-ism each game. It was interesting to see just how effective Keane was in covering for him. And I really like the Keane centre at the back. I think they bring the best out of each other's games. And I've personally been more impressed with Keane with me next to him. I think I said this last week, than I was with Keane with Duffer next to him. I agree with James. I really like this back four. It feels a shame, really, especially as if we're actively looking for defenders, if the rumours are to be believed. I do fear that it's Ben Mee that is going to get dropped out of the back four if he does shake things up a little bit. I think the two, I think Ward and Loughton are now, you know, done. I don't think they'll lose the place, providing we keep hold of Keane. I think he's staying in the centre. If he is going to bring another defender in, I fear that it's going to be a central defender, and Mee's going to lose his place, unfortunately.
It is an interesting one, isn't it? Because I think Mee's been preferred to Ward at left back pretty much for the last two seasons, but Ward has done pretty well, and Dyche is always very keen on sticking with players who performed well. Ward only lost his place last season when he got injured, and then he didn't get back in, did he? So it's an interesting one. I mean, I'm sure Mee still sees himself as a centre back, doesn't he? So he'd probably rather be playing there, but you're right, he's playing for his place at the moment.
Do you not think he looks happier though? Do you not think there's like a I've seen the
he always game. He always seemed a bit reluctant to meet at fullback, especially with the ball at his feet. You could tell that it wasn't really his. Even when he's got the ball at his feet at the centre back, he just seems more comfortable, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
He's got more options. When you're at left back, you can basically go inside to a midfielder and show him for it, back or down the line. Like, you've not got that many options.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
Okay, moving on then. You mentioned the defender that we're being linked with. There's reports came out on Monday when we're recording the podcast on Monday. Reports that we've made a bid for Brentford's James Tarkowski, Manchester-born defender. I think he's 24. Brentford, of course, we raided for Andre Gray at the start of the season. They're doing quite well this season. They're 10th in the league. But the suspicion is if we were determined to get him, we'd probably be able to with a deal to be done. Reports said 2.3 million was the bid that was rejected. James, I don't know if you've seen much of Tarkowski, but a player we were linked with when he was at Oldham, but he went to Brentford instead.
To be honest, I've not seen anything of him, but yeah, I think it's exactly the position we need to be focusing on, you know, strengthening. You know, right now the back four does look good, but I think you know, you need some cover for if, you know, form dips of one of the centre halves. And you know, obviously Mark has just been a great servant to the club, and he's, in many ways he's still a great player, but he lacks a little bit on the pace side, and I think that's why it wasn't a surprise that he was dropped against Bristol City, a side with a lot of pace. And I think you probably need younger legs in there as backup to make sure that we're able to play the sides that have quicker forwards and not struggle.
What's your view on what Natalie just said? Was that Ben Mee's the vulnerable one of the current back four?
I'd say it's probably Stephen Ward. It's probably Stephen Ward, I think, because clearly we've seen Ben Mee has been first in line for that position, and I think he's still ahead of Ward in the pecking order, and it just happens to be that he's playing at centre back at the moment. But I think if someone had to come out, I think it'd be Ward who came out and Mee'd go back to left back. But I'm reluctant to say the defence is as fixed as what Nardi said, because I don't think Galton can afford many more performances like he had away at Hull.
Okay, fair enough. So maybe more changes. It's weird to be talking about changes to the back four considering since that back four got put together we haven't conceded a goal, but I suppose that's modern football. Tarkowski then, Natalie, there's talk over whether he's a replacement for Duff or Keane, but Keane's been talking to the press after the game at the weekend and said that he's not going anywhere in January. Refreshing to see a player come out and say that so nakedly, really, that he's not interested in a move at all. He said he was flattered to be linked with Premier League clubs, but he just wants to stay at Birmingham and he gets promoted.
Yes, I like that very much. It puts and it's quite unusual for us. We tend to get hit with the silent treatment and spend an entire transfer window biting our nails and trying to lock players in cupboards because we don't want them to go. And I think in previous years where we have been a perceived selling, actually I don't think it is perceived, we have been a selling club. When you hear rumours of one of your star players on the way out and then it gets knocked on the head straight away, it's quite a refreshing change and one that I do welcome very, very much so.
I would assume then that Tarkowski would be signed to play with Keane, maybe with half an eye on Keane potentially moving elsewhere at the end of the season. But it would make little sense for us to go and spend 2-3 million quid, however much, on a defender and then to be then sat on the bench.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. I don't know. It's a funny one, and I find it quite interesting, really, that even amongst the three of us, we've got conflicting views as whether we've got to settle back for and whether we what changes we would make and who we would bring in and who's better placed for what. I think that more than anything makes it, you know, quite a stark reality that there are possible changes to be made there, and not everybody's going to see eye to eye on who our best defence is. So it's quite an interesting one. I look forward to it, really. I think it's going to be a very strange transfer window from that sense.
Well, Tarkowski's the one name we've heard so far. One that always seems to come, of course, is Henry Lansbury.
Oh, God, no.
Haven't seen much press about it yet, but I'm sure it's only a matter of time until someone puts two and two together. What sort of player would you be looking for, James, if you had the chance to strengthen the club? It does seem like there's some money available.
I'd be looking primarily at a centre-half. And if, you know, Dash isn't keen on Cartley, another winger who can play like Cartley does but with a little bit more in product, those would be the two things I'm looking for.
Do you not think we need another striker, or are you happy to wait for Barnes to come back?
I really don't think Barnes is that far away, to be honest. You know, it sounds like they're really happy with the progress he's made, and that it might not be too long for him. And in which case, I think, you know, having the three full strikers we've got now is probably more than enough in the meantime.
Is there not a bit of a fear with Barnes that he comes back and he's not quite the Ashley Barnes we know? I mean, he obviously will take a little bit of time to get back to his usual standard anyway, but I think most people would say Sam Volks isn't quite the player he was 2 years ago.
There's always that risk, but I think it'd be pretty harsh to write him off before you've had a chance to evaluate whether
that's the case. I'm not saying write him off, I'm saying maybe plan ahead for that eventuality.
Well, yeah, but then what if he comes back and he's the same player and you're wasting a massive wage?
You could do a short-term loan, pull back out.
You could. Maybe a loan could be the answer. You know, maybe if there's someone young who, you know, is probably good enough for the top half of the Championship, but he's at one of the big sides in the Premier League and can't get a game, then maybe that is the kind of player we need to look at, because quite often, you know, you do see promoted sides pick up a, you know, really promising youngster from one of the Premier League sides, and he has a really good season.
I think James Wilson at Brighton would have been an obvious one, wouldn't he? But I think pretty much all Championship clubs would have been in for him. Natalie, you've got a few million to spend. Where are you looking to improve the squad? You don't actually have a few million to spend, Milan.
I was going
to
say, where's all the
exercise? The non-never budget doesn't quite stretch that far.
No, we're just rehashing the Danny Ings money again and again and again. I really just echo what James has said then, really. I don't have an awful lot to add. I would also agree in that I don't think we need to sign a permanent striker for that very same reason. And I take on board everything that you've just said. The problem for me in our lack of goals, which I guess does sound silly on the back of 2-4-0 home victories, but we've got a supply problem. There's a real lack of creativity in midfield. So I think for me, the number one position is a good winger. Somebody who is the player that we all want Boyd to be. Somebody who's fast, somebody who will run relentlessly, but somebody who will actually create chances. Because at the moment, it's so uninspiring as our midfield in terms of creating opportunities for goals. We've got such talent with Gray. I still think Volks will come good once he gets fit. And obviously, I think, like you say, Barnes is on his way back this season. We've also got, you know, Hennings and Long as well. So I think if we can just find some inspiration in that midfield, then we will start scoring a lot of goals. So that would be where I would spend the money. Although saying that, I have heard today the rumours of us getting Crouch on loan till the end of the season.
I saw Crouch mentioned a couple of times on Twitter and thought,
yeah,
that seems utterly ludicrous.
Yeah, it just seems a very bizarre thing, but you never know. Crouch up front.
Well, we tried to sign him, didn't we, 15 years ago or something, when there was a race riots, and He came up with his missus, and the time was on fire, and he said, no, I don't think so. And I think that's when he ended up going to QPR.
Oh, excellent. I was talking about that the other day, and I couldn't remember which player it was who backfired, so that's hilarious that he's actually Crouch. Brilliant.
I'm pretty sure it was Crouch, yeah. It'd be an interesting one. I'm sure he'd he'd do well in the Championship, but I don't think it would really encourage the passing football on the ground that a lot of Burnley fans want to see. If you sign Peter Crouch, he's pretty much the biggest player around. Any specific players anyone wants to raise?
I don't really believe in, like, specifically naming players. You're just setting yourself up for a fall, aren't you? You're just going to get your hopes up and then you'll be disappointed. You'll be thinking, oh, imagine all these players we could sign, and then it will happen. You'll be like...
It's tricky anyway, isn't it? Because, like, you watch Burnley every week, you don't necessarily see a lot of other Championship football. You don't know who's playing well, who might be available.
Yeah, and also it's always hard to pick who you get rid of, isn't it?
Yeah,
I suppose. I mean,
that's kind of why I say, you know,
we'll be
player
looking,
like,
to move players on.
It's like, say, a player like Kylie, but I don't want to get rid of Kylie. I think he should be playing.
I don't want to get rid of him. To be fair, this squad should be good enough. We are still going back to the point.
But people keep saying no, and we need to buy players.
They're not playing to their full potential. If this squad improves in some way, we don't need to buy that many more players. I think it's too knee-jerk to suggest that we need to buy half another squad when the one we've got on paper should be doing a lot better than it is.
I think there's definitely a case for saying we should be getting more from the squad. I think you look at the players we've brought in, I don't think we've got as much out of them as you'd expect. Henning's alright, he's adapting to a new league, but he's only scored one goal. Long hasn't scored yet, but alright, he's not been on the pitch a lot. Talk about, alright, I'm the one saying go out and sign a striker who's going to score goals, but we signed two in the summer and they've scored one goal between them. We've got to get more out of them first.
True, I agree.
Next up for Burnley then, a trip to Middlesbrough, back to Teesside. We're not on the best record there in recent years. For the FA Cup game, you suspect both teams would probably rotate a little bit. You're expecting a lot of changes from Burnley, James?
I want to say no, because I'd like to see us take the FA Cup semi-seriously. But
it's a tough tie, isn't it? But you'd expect Middlesbrough to rotate quite a lot, so it's surely an opportunity to get into the next round.
Yeah, you see, that's the difficulty, isn't it? I don't know whether we'll necessarily be aiming to, you know, put the focus on it that maybe we could do. But I think it, you know, there's definitely an opportunity there to win, because I think Middlesbrough obviously will rotate. They're near the top of the league and they want to keep that going, so they're probably trying to be a little bit conservative about wearing players out. I think there could be a couple of changes, but I don't think it'd be anything too drastic.
Probably worth pointing out that Middlesbrough rotated when we went up there for the league game. I think they made four or five changes and still beat us quite easily, so their squad depth is quite clearly better than ours, although the manager's more keen to use the squad. A couple of players we could certainly use a start, Natalie. Hennings maybe could come in, Ulverstad if he's fit, it'd be good to see him in action.
Definitely. I do share James's opinion that I think I would like to see us take this game seriously. It's been a while since we had a good FA Cup run, certainly. We seem to get really crappy away draws in the third round, which are not glamorous enough to be exciting, and against better teams who just beat us, and we end up not seeing a decent FA Cup game. So I'd really like us to really go for it this year, because I think it can do a lot for the team's confidence, and I think it would be good for the fans as well to get a good cup run. So in that sense, I'd like us to field as strong a team as we possibly can. Saying that, the league does have to take priority. Hennings is a player who is perfect to start this game. I'd like to see him play 90 minutes, to be honest, and a real runabout. I'm tempted to say, and I know this might be a bit controversial, but I'm tempted to say bring Boyd back into the side.
No,
honestly, and make him play 90 minutes and make him fight once again for his place again, and make him prove that he is as good a player as we saw last season. Other than that, I'm not expecting too many changes, to be honest.
I think you've got a point on Boyd. I think maybe a little change. It's a cup game, the pressure's slightly different. I think there's more. I certainly don't think we'll go to Middlesbrough and play for a 0-0 like we did a few weeks ago. I think we'll try and win the game, because a replay is the last thing either side will want. Maybe a little change and maybe a bit more attacking freedom would do Boyd the power of good. Cup runs can work both ways, can't they, James? They can be a distraction and they can provide momentum, as we saw when we got promoted under Ryan Colley and had cup runs in both competitions. It really seems to give the team a big confidence boost, especially when we were beating teams above us in the league pyramid.
Yeah, and I think actually when you look back at that, maybe provides a little bit of a distraction for how we weren't necessarily that great in the league until we sort of really got up steam at the back end of the season. I think a lot of that was to do with you know, the cup run, giving us a little bit of extra energy. And I think that season in particular shows that, you know, the theory that if you want to focus on getting promoted, you maybe don't want to put any focus on the cups isn't necessarily true. And, you know, I think the FA Cup in particular, Sarge should be putting the strongest team and they should be looking to challenge for it. You know, particularly in this day and age when winning the Premier League is pretty much unattainable to any but maybe five or six clubs who have a lot of money. I think it's the trophy that is there for other sides to win.
I suppose Dash will have half an eye on the games coming up. We're playing Tuesday, Friday, Monday, so three games in less than a week. That's got to be something that's going to affect his team selection. Well, non-predictions as ever then, James, you get first go. I suppose it's difficult without knowing what sort of teams the manager's going to put out, but do you think Burnley have got a decent chance of getting through to the next round?
I think it's going to be tough, and I'm going to say actually it's going to need a replay and it's going to be 1-1.
No, I think that would be the worst possible scenario for both clubs. I don't think anyone would want another game against Middlesbrough. Natalie, what are your thoughts?
I was going to say exactly the same thing. I was just going to say, yes, I think that this is going to end up as a replay back at Turf. I think we're going to play a lot better than we did against them in the league, and I think we'll get a draw. I'm going to go, I can't say 1-1 now because James said it, so I'll go 0-0.
I don't think we can be any worse than we were there last time, but I suspect we're going to lose again because I think Borough are in a very good run and are basically just a better team. The next podcast then will be after that Tuesday night game I mentioned against MK Dons. A tricky game in some ways, but teams towards the bottom of the league away from home are the games that you expect to win if you are going to have a promotion challenge, James.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you've got to win games against weaker sides, so hopefully it'll be a strong win with a clean sheet.
Same, Natalie, you're expecting us to go to MK Dons and win?
Yes, absolutely. Dons were one of the weaker sides we've seen play at Turf this season. Saying that, they played us quite early on. I would expect them to have found the feet a little bit more now, but they weren't a strong Championship side at all, so I do expect us to win, yes.
Excellent. That's about it then for this week's podcast. Next week's podcast will hopefully be out between the MK Dons and Brentford games. We'll have to work out when we're going to record that. But yeah, it should be out then. If you've got any feedback or comments or anything you want to tell us about the podcast, please do get in touch. The email address is podcast@nonanever.net. As always, you can also get us on Twitter @nonanevernet or by Facebooking us, which is facebook.com/nonanevernet. All those different ways you can get in touch with the podcast. Thanks to James and Natalie for joining me, and we'll be back sometime next week when we've worked out how we're going to do it. But that's it for this week. Bye.